The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, I think sort of wintry weather has arrived in Israel. It was only 12 degrees this morning. Everybody's got their winter coats out. You know, this by Israeli standards is very much winter, certainly in the coastal area. I know that Jerusalem does get a lot colder. Dry weather, still blue skies, but clearly heading into the colder time of the year. So still no sign of any significant rains, though. We've had a few kind of rainfalls here and there, and sort of a big storm, half an hour of rain, but really not more than that. So we're looking forward to getting a bit of rain over the winter as well.
Yeah, interesting. At least hopefully we'll get a decent amount of rain. All right, let's talk about this government situation, because It's bizarre.
It is bizarre. I mean, Israel's very much into a place where in all of Israel's history, we've never been. President, and I got it wrong yesterday when I said that the mandate had expired the previous midnight. In fact, the mandate that was given to Benny Gantz expired last night. Not that it makes much difference. The outcome remains the same. Today, the president will hand the mandate over to the Speaker of the Knesset. He will inform the Speaker of the Knesset officially that no government has been formed, and that triggers the 3 weeks during which any member of Knesset can form the government. And as I say, you know, we've never been here before, so there is really no precedent and no expectation about what might transpire during this time. I think that Prime Minister Netanyahu still does believe that he could potentially form a government. And even though I haven't seen it mentioned in any of the written press, I heard a report this morning which has set an expectation that there may well be an announcement today on the issue of his legal proceedings. And I think that that would be immensely helpful either way. I mean, whichever way it goes, I have no predisposition. Whatever the prosecution will decide, they will decide. The Attorney General will be involved. Big expectations about what kind of event it's going to be. You know, there was a little bit of cynicism in the radio report that I heard about, you know, it needs to be announced beforehand, and then they need to make it exactly at 8 o'clock, and there needs to be a certain procedure around how this announcement is going to be made. But there is an expectation that we're going to hear more about the legal proceedings today. And if that's the case, that could very much influence how the next 3 weeks progress. So it'd be interesting to see that. But I think that that's really the only thing that could potentially change the situation. I don't see anything else really transpiring that will make any significant difference to where we are right now, which makes me believe that all of a sudden people will come to a realization that we need to form a government, we need to have a government in place, and compromises will be forthcoming. I don't see that happening, but I do see the legal proceedings potentially having a big influence on the situation.
The worst part about this whole situation is that there's no real confidence that I can see that come the next election, things are going to be any different.
I can't see how they can be different. People haven't changed their minds about who they wish to support. There have been some opinion polls backwards and forwards. The last opinion poll that I saw suggested that if an election was held on the day in which the opinion poll was conducted, that the situation in terms of the number of seats each party would receive would be more or less the same as what we have today. There still seemed to be quite a lot of support from Prime Minister Netanyahu, because the question was asked in that particular opinion poll who you would support if you had the opportunity to vote directly for a person as Prime Minister rather than just to vote for a party and allow that party to nominate its leader as the Prime Minister. And Prime Minister Netanyahu got a lot more support than did Benny Gantz, which I found quite interesting. I think where Gantz is concerned, there is still an element of not knowing, because he's never really been in the government in a way in which people can kind of be allowed to make up their minds about how he might be Prime Minister. I mean, I know that he has been Chief of General Staff, and that comes with a lot of responsibility and a certain leadership capability, and it comes with a lot of experience in handling matters of state and security issues, certainly in handling big organizations, because, you know, managing the army and being at the head of the army is not an insignificant role. You know, one has to give some credit for the experience that he gained as being chief of general staff. Having said that, it's not quite in the same sphere as politics, and the political aspect of it is entirely different. In the army, you know, people are required to adhere to commands and are punished if they don't do so. In the government, it's not quite the same. And so therefore the question is, how would he respond to having to play diplomacy and politics as opposed to military commands? And therein lies some question. And of course, the other thing that has come up, has raised itself in terms of Benny Gantz and how he might run a government, is not only him, but also the people who are around him. He's got former chiefs of general staff in the form of Gabi Ashkenazi, in the form of Bogi Yaalon, and he's got Yair Lapid and other people around him, all of whom are trying to influence him one way or another. And there isn't any real uniform view. There isn't any consistency in terms of the political stance that is adopted by these people. It's a somewhat of a mishmash of different views and ideas and different interests. And, you know, there is a view that that might be extremely difficult to manage from within his party, never mind what goes on in terms of trying to manage coalition partners. So there are some questions about Benny Gantz and his credentials. But I think a lot of people just want change. Anybody come along, anybody with some sort of, you know, capability,
just
some
something,
sort of
just
track record.
But, and also, yeah, just to move forward. I think this whole point of not moving forward is must be a massive strain on Israeli morale and Israeli psyche. Leslie says, what happens if they allowed people, citizens who aren't in the country, to vote? Maybe that would help. I would be happy to go to Pretoria to do so.
Okay. Well, it would be interesting to know who Leslie would vote for, of course. But I don't know that allowing Israelis who are not in Israel to vote would really make a huge difference. I'm not quite sure what the numbers are. I think in the US there probably are a significant number, but I don't know what the numbers are. And I don't know whether that would really make a difference. I mean, it might be one seat here or one seat there, or maybe even if it's two or three seats here or there. The question is, does that really mean that we will have an entirely different political situation post the election? Anyway, I mean, it's all highly theoretical because, of course, Israelis who are not in Israel are not entitled to vote, other than those who are on official diplomatic duty. They do have the opportunity and are given the right to vote. But everybody else, people who are away on holiday or Israelis who are residing abroad, do not have the right to vote. And in fact, a lot of people do choose to come to Israel to take some sort of a vacation here in order to come and vote. That's also been a phenomenon.
So really what you're saying that is if Leslie really had commitment to Israel, she would go to vote. Never mind Pretoria.
Exactly, Howard. Yeah. I wasn't going to say that.
No, well, you know, it's my job. It's my job, you know. It's what I have to do. All right. So that's the situation there. Obviously, it's going to be a story that sadly we're going to continue talking about because it just doesn't seem to go away. All right. And the U.S. government has announced that the West Bank settlements are not illegal. We've touched on this a few times. Tell us a little bit more about this.
Well, this was an interesting announcement that came earlier in the week, where the Trump administration decided, for reasons which are not exactly clear to me, and the timing was, for me, quite strange. Mike Pompeo standing up and saying that the U.S. government has done this analysis, and as far as the U.S. government is concerned, Israel's activities beyond the Green Line, which is the border that was established before 1967, so the, you know, what we generally loosely call the West Bank, what some people like to call the settlements, you know, I don't really subscribe to any particular point of view because all of these words are so loaded in their meanings, and I don't really want to get into all the meanings. I just want to talk about the area that is beyond the 1967 borders. The U.S. government has said that as far as the U.S. administration is concerned, the presence of Israel in those areas and the settlements and the fact that people live there, Israeli activity, certain Israeli law, military law applies to this, is not beyond, is not a contravention of international law. And I'm not exactly sure how they've done that assessment. And I'm not exactly sure why they've decided to announce it right now, but that's what happened. And of course, then the rumor mill starts churning about why the U.S. government decided to make this announcement and what lay behind it. And what I understand is that the U.S. administration did actually first inquire with the Israeli government whether they thought that making an announcement like that might well provoke further tensions between Israelis and Palestinians, and whether this might be a provocative statement, and whether it might therefore lead to any sort of violence or terror activities or anything like that. And I understand that the Israeli government said they thought not, that it would be a fairly benign kind of thing. And indeed, that's the way it has turned out. I mean, the Palestinian Authority did criticize the U.S. administration about this announcement, but nothing more than that. And, it also comes in the wake of a lot of rumor about how President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu's relationship might have suffered a little since the whole election debacle has been going on. Trump is quoted as saying he doesn't like to befriend losers, and he's kind of considering Netanyahu to be something of a loser right now, very American kind of loser term, because he hasn't been able to...
A lunatic of note. No, it's unbelievable.
You can't really know what to believe. But this announcement came out of nowhere, and of course it has then caused the United Nations Security Council to meet on the matter. And interestingly, just yesterday, the United Nations Security Council decided that they entirely disagree with the U.S. stance on this matter. What a shock and a horror and surprise. 14 members of the United Nations Security Council out of the 15 who sit on that council have actually criticized the U.S. stance, of course, the U.S. being the only detractor from that decision, saying that they felt that the activities that Israel conducts beyond the green line are, in fact, a contravention of international law, and they feel that an announcement could escalate the already tense situation between Israel and the Palestinians and Israeli settlement activities, and of course we tie it into the European Court of Justice decision that products and services that come out of that area need to be labeled separately and differently in order to depict that they come from. So, I mean, there are certainly some questions about the international law that applies to Israel, but one thing is, by the way, it's interesting that it doesn't only apply to the West Bank, in inverted commas, but they've also applied this to the Golan Heights and to East Jerusalem. Now, you know, when you start talking about East Jerusalem, which is part of Israel's capital, then things become very sensitive, because, you know, you start questioning Israel's right to even have any authority over the Temple Mount. And of course, you know, that's kind of where things get a little touchy for not only for Israelis, but for Jews around the world. And, you know, one thing that we can absolutely take for granted is that the Israeli government will never give up its right to have control, whatever the control is, over the area around the Temple Mount, and to give access to Jews, Israelis, Jews from around the world, and indeed Christians and Muslims and everybody else, give them the right to have access to holy sites and the Temple Mount in particular. So when you start applying this to East Jerusalem, it kind of takes on a slightly different angle and a slightly different view. But be that as it may, there will continue to be very much diverse opinions about what international law really applies. At the moment, we think the U.S. government is in agreement with Israel that, you know, as far as they're concerned, Israel has every right to be there. But of course, it's not quite as simple as all that.
Indeed. We are out of time, but I do want you to tell me very, very quickly, or tell us very quickly, about what Israel's got to do with the move of Jose Mourinho to Tottenham.
With apologies to Louis, because I don't want to steal his thunder here, but there is this Israeli guy who's labeled as a kind of a super agent. His name is Pini Zahavi, and apparently he represents Jose Mourinho. Very few people actually know that. I was even surprised. And of course, Jose Mourinho, as we heard, has moved to Tottenham to the Spurs. We understand that Pini Zahavi was very much instrumental in creating this, in negotiating with Daniel Levy, the club chairman of Tottenham Hotspur, to bring Jose to Spurs. And apparently Pini's been involved in a lot of work, not only with Jose Mourinho, but with Neymar, to bring him from Barcelona to Paris Saint-Germain. So apparently Pini Zahavi, a very quiet and a very kind of low-key individual, is very much behind a lot of activity, big activity that's going on in the football world. Just a little interesting
story. Yeah, I love that story. Absolutely. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We hope, wishing you a peaceful and wonderful weekend, and we'll catch you, of course, on Monday morning. This morning's Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency, your trusted property professional in Israel. The Blue Agency manages over 350 shekels worth of residential investment properties throughout Israel for owners who live in Israel as well as overseas. Their dedicated property management team will provide you with a level of service that can't be beaten. You can WhatsApp them on 0765772000 right now, and they will contact you to make a personal appointment and to discuss how they make long-distance ownership simple and rewarding. That's the Blue Agency.